All right, everybody, thanks for joining us. A quick heads up, today is general questions. We'll either do 1 or 2 hours based on call volume. Right now, calls are light. They're starting to come in, and questions are really light. So today is your chance. If you've got a question, a comment, a topic, general questions, health questions, whatever they might be, press 1 on your phone right now, and the sooner you do that, the better your odds. And I can tell you, if you press 1 right now, we will definitely get to you. As we go farther into the hour and the calls start coming in, it gets a little tougher, but right now you've got a shot. So let's get started.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry.
This is Trucking Business and Beyond, the show that puts the money where it belongs,
back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking. We take your calls and answer your questions about trucks, money, fuel mileage, maintenance, tires, taxes, technology, health and fitness on the road, getting started as an owner-operator, finding freight, working with brokers, getting your authority. The list goes on and on. If you've got a question about anything at all, that's what this show's for. Pick up the phone, give me a call, and we'll talk about it. Today, I am going to wrap up the book review that I've been working on for the last week or so. One of my favorite books had a huge impact on me, continues to have a huge impact. I always go back to this, and it's one of those things, you know, I've heard golf described this way and fly fishing, and there are certainly some other things that they're easy to understand and actually easy to learn how to do it and virtually impossible to master. And that's kind of the way I look at this book. When you look at the 7 habits, there's nothing overly complicated here. This is pretty simple. I read this book 25 years ago and continue to work on these habits all the time. If they were easy to master, everybody would be doing it. They're not. They require constant work. But the idea of making these habits, if they become habits, then it is much easier. So I'm also going to do a book review on a couple good books that I've read about habits specifically and how to develop habits. And once you learn how to develop a habit, then these are 7 really good habits to work on. And, you know, there's a couple ways to look at this. I think that one of the best ways to do this might be to just work on one habit at a time, to be aware of all of them and know what they are, but to really focus on one at a time. Any more than that, and it's just going to be overwhelming. So what I'm going to do today is I'm going to run quickly through the first 6 habits that I've already talked about in previous shows, give you the 7th habit and wrap this up, and then you can decide, is this a book you would like to read or listen to? And I will tell you, this isn't really an easy listening book. Some books are just really quick and light and easy, and you get through them pretty quick, and there's a good story and a message, and they're easy to listen to. This one isn't. This one you've got to work a little bit at. So this one isn't necessarily a book that I recommend for people who are just getting started reading or listening to books. You could try it, but don't get frustrated if you have a little more difficult time with this book. But don't give up on it either. If you need to go read or listen to a couple, and I'll recommend some easier books to get started, but don't get frustrated with this one if it's not working right away. This one is a little more difficult to listen to, but I promise you it's worth it. So back through the habits, the first three are all about you, working on yourself. And habit number one is be proactive. All this is talking about is most people are very reactive. They're reactive every day. They're reactive in their life, and they're reactive in most areas of their life. And what I mean by that is they wait for something to happen, and then they react to it. It's surprising, though, if you really look around and pay attention and look at your own life, how many things in your life right now are exactly the way you want them to be, or even close. Did you really plan your life? Did you plan your business? Did you plan where you live, who you're with? We could go on and on, but did you plan, or did you just kind of end up with stuff by default? And one of the ways to really be honest and know this is look around. If you could sit down and say, I want to live in this place with these people around me every day and make this much money and do this and have this hobby, and is your life the way you would want it to be? And if not, maybe it's because you've never really planned anything. You just react. Most people do. So this is the opposite of reacting, being proactive, meaning you decide what you want, and then you start working to get it. And the rest of the habits are all geared towards helping you become more effective at getting the things that you want. So be proactive. That's number one. Habit number two, begin with the end in mind. And that fits right in with what I was just talking about. If you could plan your life, what would it look like? And habit number two says, start doing that. Begin with the end in mind. What is the ultimate goal of your life, for one? That's a big one. But what's the ultimate goal of your business, of your relationships, of your spirituality, of any area in your life? What do you want it to look like? Begin with that picture. Down and decide, because there is no one right answer for this. This is where you get to decide what you want. But very few people take the time to make that decision and know what they want to work for. And you have to have a destination in mind or you'll never get there. And that's really what habit number two is all about. Begin with the end in mind. Where do you want to go? What do you want to achieve? What do you want to accomplish? And then we move on to habit number three. Remember, the first three are all about you. So habit number three, put first things first. And there's some really great examples of this in the book. When I covered this in one of the earlier shows, I talked about the big rocks in a jar and that metaphor of we get so busy just doing stuff every day and reacting. We're reacting to what everybody else wants from us. Everybody wants our attention in some way. And we react to that all day long. And it's even worse today with all the social media and all the connectivity we have, and email and voicemail and text messaging and instant messaging and direct messaging and Facebook and Twitter and, you know, 800 TV channels and 250 radio channels. And it's wonderful to have access to all that. But there's a downside. And the downside is it takes over people's lives. And they are so immersed in this stuff that we're just surrounded by. And they just live life through that media, whether it's social media or TV or radio or whatever it might be. And again, those are not bad things. They're good things, but they have a downside, and we have to manage that. And habit number three is all about that. Put first things first. So if you know there are things you should be doing in life, whether it's about your health, about your relationships, about your money, about your business, about your career, whatever it might be, if there are things you know you should be doing, then put those first. Because what most people do is they say, well, I'll get to that when I have time. I'll get to that when I get done with all this stuff that has to get done. Well, what you have to really look at is the things you're doing every day, day after day after day. Do they really have to be done? And if you haven't gotten to any of those big projects yet, those important things you know you should be doing, if you haven't gotten to them yet, what do you think is going to change? There's always other stuff. So the idea of habit number three, begin with the end in mind, is put the important stuff first, and there will be time to get to the other stuff. And if there isn't, maybe that stuff just doesn't need to get done. Maybe it's just not all. So that's a great lesson there. Now, the next three habits, the first three are all about working on you, and the next three are all about working together, working with other people. So I'm going to come back. I'm going to talk about those. I'm going to move on to that last habit. We're going to wrap this up, and then we're going to get to your calls and questions. So don't go away. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rupp. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. We're going to get to some calls and questions here in a little bit. I'm wrapping up the book review, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People by Stephen Covey. And I've been through habits, just to recap on 1 through 3. Those are all about working on yourself. And then once you work on yourself, you really want to get better at working with other people, because you can accomplish so much more with other people than you can on your own. So habit number 4, think win-win. This comes out of a lot of negotiation training, where, you know, a lot of us think that negotiations are all about win-lose, meaning, you know, we think of negotiation in terms of money and deals, and I want to pay less and you want to get more, so one of us is going to win and one of us is going to lose, or we're going to compromise and we're going to meet in the middle. But that's not what this is about. Thinking win-win is about really getting creative in dealing with other people, not just negotiating a specific deal, but working together long-term. I talk about this all the time when it comes to dealing with brokers. See, almost everybody who deals with brokers, the people who complain a lot, are always thinking win-lose. They want more money on the load. The broker won't pay them enough. They feel like the broker's screwing them. And they just do this over and over and over. And they never take time to build relationships and start thinking win-win. How do we make this work for everybody? And that doesn't mean compromising and meeting in the middle. That does not mean that I want $2 a mile and the broker wants to pay $1.50 a mile. And if we meet in the middle at $1.75, everybody wins. That's not the case. It goes way, way beyond that in thinking about things other than just money. And this takes work. And this is why you really have to work on those first three habits. If you think you're going to jump right to this one and become a master negotiator, and you're not. Negotiation, and we should probably come up with another word, because really what we're talking about is building relationships. We negotiate with people every single day, all day. Well, we're talking about building relationships and then working on things that make that relationship beneficial for everybody. Let me give you just a quick example in our business. I could take the traditional model of most radio, where we just go out to companies and say, here's a commercial, here's the price. You buy a commercial from us, we'll play it during our show. We get money and you get, you know, advertisement and exposure for your product. You know, that works. There's nothing wrong with that. But that's it. I mean, that's the end of the transaction. I really don't see much going on beyond that. We have never done that on radio. We don't do commercials. We don't take just money to advertise a product. We build relationships with companies where everybody benefits. Now, in this example, we could actually say, think win-win-win. Us as a company, the companies we partner with, and you as our listeners and clients and customers. I want everybody to win. How do we do that? So we have a platform, obviously. We have a radio show that a lot of people listen to. We have a website that a lot of people visit. We're active in social media. So we are a way to reach a specific market, primarily owner-operators and drivers. That's what we bring to the table. We also bring a lot of good information for the listeners, or we wouldn't have all of these listeners and followers. So the benefit we bring to those two other parties, to other companies, we bring exposure for their product and service. To the listeners and the clients, we bring information and answers and solutions. Now, what does the other company bring? Well, they could just bring money and we could just charge them. But again, that goes back to that, you know, kind of win-lose model. What can we do beyond that? So what does a company like Pittsburgh Power bring to us? I could go out and find 1,000 other shops that would pay us to advertise and be on our show. But that doesn't reach that conclusion of win, win, win that I'm looking for. We partner and find the companies that can bring a lot of value to the proposition. Look at everything that Pittsburgh Power has developed. They are leading the entire country. I don't know of anybody else that is making as much headway on fixing these emission engines and keeping them running right as Pittsburgh Power. We've developed new products along with them. They bring a tremendous amount of value. In fact, so much value, we now devote an entire hour to having them help us help you. Now, what part do you play in this? You know, we hope that you find enough value in this that you work with us, and you do. That's how we make money. And you work with our partner companies, and you do. And that's how this all works as a win-win-win. And it's something we have to constantly tweak and work on. So, habit number five, seek first to understand, then to be understood. This may be one of the most difficult, I think. And I would refer you back to one of the earlier shows where I talked a lot about this. But this comes in when we're communicating with other people. Our habit now for most people, and our what we want to do is we want to make people understand us. We have these ideas and we have these thoughts, and we want people to understand them, and we try to communicate that. We try to get them to understand. It doesn't work very well. You have to first work really hard at understanding the other person first. Then you can start to get your ideas across to them. There's a phrase or a saying or a quote, and I won't get this exactly right. This might have been Zig Ziglar. He has so many good quotes. It goes something like this. Let me see if I can get this right. People don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. And that really sums this up. Seek first to understand, then to be understood. People don't care how much you know until they know how much you care about them. And that's what this is all about. Habit number 6 is synergize. Synergize really wraps up the other two. It's about working together, and that two people coming together create more than what it looks like. So I couldn't figure out any other way to really describe this when I reviewed this one. So I just used numbers. If I bring 50 to the transaction, just think of it as a number, and somebody else brings 50. Well, when you add those two together, you get 100. But if you synergize properly, if you work all these other habits first, when you synergize, instead of 50 plus 50 being 100, it becomes 125. The sum is more than the total of the parts. And that's what synergizing is all about. But again, you can't just jump to this and think you're going to work with somebody and create amazing things. These habits are in a specific order for a reason. Now, habit number 7, this is one of my favorite. It's also the one I know I should do more of. We should all do more of, and we don't, but we know we should. And if we keep it in the forefront and we think about it, we work on it, we make it a habit, it will get easier. And habit number 7 is sharp the saw. There's another great quote by Abraham Lincoln. And again, I'm going to paraphrase here. You can go look up the quote. I might get the numbers wrong, but you get the idea. And I'm pretty sure this was Abraham Lincoln that said this. He said, if you give me 4 hours to chop down a tree, I'll spend the first 3 sharpening the saw. And I'm sure that's where Stephen Covey got the idea for the name of this habit, was sharpen the saw. And what it means is you've got to constantly work on you and take time. And that could be things like exercise. It could be things like meditation. It could be things like going back to school or listening to books, attending seminars, taking classes, doing yoga. There's 1,000 things you can do to make you better and more effective. It could be making sure that you get good sleep. Could be making sure that you're eating better. We could go on and on and on, all kinds of things, but it's about work, taking time to work on you, because you can't be effective at any of these other things unless you take care of yourself. This is a really important one, and even very effective people skip this one, and then they become less and less effective over time. They won't take the time to work on themselves. So that's it. We're going to come right back after this break, and we're going to get to your calls and questions. So stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rupp. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. We just wrapped up my first book review, the new way we're doing it. And if you haven't been listening the last couple of weeks, or if you're new, I've had an idea that I've been working on for a long time about a podcast just about book reviews, and I just can't seem to fit it into my schedule and get it done. So I thought, while I'm working on a way to make that happen, because I have so many books I want to review and introduce you to and let you know about, but because I couldn't make it work, I had to come up with another idea. If what you're doing isn't working, try something else. We all know what the definition of insanity is. If you keep doing the same thing, you'll get the same result. So I kept trying to get this podcast launched, and it wasn't working, and I would give up on it for a while, and I thought, I've got to figure out a way. Why not take the first segment or a segment here and there and do the book reviews in pieces? So I'd have to go back and look. I think this one took me, I don't know, maybe as many as 10 shows. And I'd love to hear your feedback. So either call me on the air, let me know what you think about the book reviews, or send me an email, support@letstruck.com. So far, the response has been very, very positive. So we're going to continue with this idea and see what you think. Let's get to some calls. Let's go to Indiana. John, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. Kevin, I had a question about hand-cooked super singles. Would you recommend them, or would you stick to Michelin pair?
You know, Michelin obviously is my favorite tire in almost every case. There are a couple, you know, specialty tires that I recommend other brands. But for the most part, you know, steer tires, wide singles, trailer tires in, you know, our most common sizes, hands down, Michelin just makes an awesome product. Lowest rolling resistance in almost every category, long life tires, very high quality. I think one of the problems, if I remember, on the Hankook, I don't think we can get any rolling resistance numbers on their wide single, or can we? Have you looked for that?
No, I haven't. That was going to be my next question, Kevin, if you could look that up and see where there is a rolling resistance on it. The guy I talked to had no idea.
Yeah, that's the other problem. Tire dealers, tire places, they just don't know this stuff at all. It's kind of a shame, but that just seems to be the way it works. Let me see. You know, I just don't think I have any numbers on Hankook at all for their wide singles. And that's part of the problem. So yeah, I would skip those. You know, sometimes it's tempting because there's no question Michelin tires carry a premium price because they're a premium tire. And it's tempting to look at a tire and go, wow, but look at all the money I could save. But honestly, you don't. You end up eating it up in fuel. The tires don't last as long. You don't have that same quality in the handling and all the other benefits. So I have just always been a big believer in I will compromise somewhere else. I won't compromise on tires.
Uh-huh. Okay. I've had really good luck with Michelin, and a guy told me there was like $300 price difference, and I thought, you know, is it worth the savings? And I was just wanting someone else's opinion, and I thought,
yeah, well,
you.
Let's talk about that for a second. So $300 times four wide singles, $1,200. When you have to write the check today, that's a big number. I get it. But all it would take is if the Michelin gets 0.2 mph better, you're going to wipe out that savings in less than a year. And most people run drive tires for 2 or 3 years. So now you start looking, that cheaper tire is going to cost you three times more over the life of the tire just in fuel. And then if we figure in tire life, it really starts to get pretty obvious that it's always worth it to buy the better tire and to buy the lower rolling resistance.
That makes sense. My thought there, Kevin. I had another question. I bit my tongue and I lost it. But.
Well, we'll move on, and if you think about it, we'll get you back on another show, and we'll get to your other question. Let's go to New York. Tim, welcome to the program.
Hey there, Kevin. Got two questions. One of them is about buying fuel. You know, I'm leasing on Landstar here, loving it, and trying to figure out what state to buy fuel in, what states not to buy fuel in. You know, I got a really long range of the truck. I can go for 1,300 miles. So just trying to figure out what state to buy fuel in.
Good question. And the answer changes every single day. You know, I could give you some general rules about a couple of specific states that hardly ever change. You know, like you should always buy fuel in Florida rather than Georgia. That one almost never changes. But then there are neighboring states, North Carolina, South Carolina, where literally changes every day. The price and the tax is so close that you've got to watch that every day. So I don't want to tell people these are the best states because it's going to change. And I don't want them getting locked into thinking, oh, Kevin said Florida's always better, even though I just said that, because there is a day when sometimes Georgia just happens to be better. And we actually have to take this idea a little further, because how many truck stops are in each state? And don't they all have different prices? So what we're really looking for is we're looking for the best truck stop along our route to get the most value for our money, to get the lowest fuel price. Now, that should be simple. We should just be able to look at everybody's prices and say, oh, well, there's the lowest. But you can't do that because of fuel tax. Fuel tax is what confuses the issue about where I should buy my fuel. Now,
right,
this
I know
is one of
different
the,
states have different.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Wildly different fuel tax rates. So you just can't compare prices without understanding fuel tax and how it affects this idea. So this is one of the more difficult topics I have to help people with. I've tried over the years. Some people get it. As soon as you get it, it's like the light bulb goes off. You look at it, you go, oh my God, well, that's simple. But until you get it, you don't get it. And I have a hard time with this one over the radio or the phone, because it's much easier when I can walk you through this step by step, and if I can use examples and use numbers. The problem is when somebody calls me, it would take me 30 to 45 minutes each time. So there's good news. Tomorrow, as a matter of fact, we are going to do a podcast on this topic. We're going to spend 1 hour on fuel tax, fuel optimization, where to buy your fuel, how to know where to buy your fuel. And we're, you know, earlier I was talking about our partner companies and the value they bring. One of our partner companies is ProMiles, and ProMiles does fuel tax and fuel routing and fuel optimization. And ProMiles is going to join us, and we're going to talk about their system. And here's the beauty. I'll give you kind of a heads up on ProMiles and how it works. And we're putting together a special package for our listeners and that kind of stuff. So don't run off and do this yet. Wait till tomorrow and we get this all put together. But here's how ProMiles works. You go into the software and you say, okay, I'm in San Antonio and I'm going to Seattle. And we can even route this from address to address. So you plug in just like you would kind of on a GPS. I'm here and I want to go here. their software looks at every single truck stop along that route, knows the price today, right now, knows all the prices at all those truck stops, knows what the fuel tax is in each state, does all the math for you, and even knows how much fuel is in your tank and what your fuel mileage is and all these other numbers, and says, okay, look, you need to fuel at this exit, this truck stop, and you need to get this many gallons. And it optimizes it to make sure you pay the least amount of money for the fuel possible, and you don't need to know all the other stuff. I want to do the webinar because I want everybody to understand it. But once you understand it, then you'll see that this is easy. I just use the software, plug it in every day, and I make sure I pay the least amount of money possible every single time I do it. So join us tomorrow for that. And then we'll post it so you can go back and listen to it anytime you want. Stick around. We'll be right back. Kevin Huff. All right, a quick heads up here. We're heading into the fourth segment of the first hour. Let me give you a rundown. Actually, calls are really heavy. We've got a lot of callers today. We hardly have any questions. So this is your chance. If you want to get through right now, for the next hour, we're going to come back and do another hour. So I have enough questions to get me through and a couple extra, but press one on your phone right now, questions, comments, topics about anything at all, and I promise we'll get to you in the next hour. Now, if I don't get a lot of new questions, we're probably just going to wrap it up with this hour. Here we go. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. We're down to the final segment, so I am going to get to some of the phone calls and get to as many as I can here. So I'm going to head off to Kansas. Wade, welcome to the program.
How's it going? I really enjoy your show.
Thanks. What can I help you with today?
Well, I'm new. I'm trying to figure out more about the keto clarity and some of your product line, find out more about the Bulletproof coffee and some of the other stuff. I'm about 60 pounds overweight, and I've tried numerous supplements to try to help things out, but I'll lose weight, you know, 20 here, 25, but I don't keep it off, and I turn around and gain it back.
Which is very, very common, by the way. I mean, that is the story for 95% of the population. And people are frustrated. And the one thing I will tell you is we can talk about some supplements, but that is never my focus. My focus first is on getting good nutrition from the food we eat and knowing that we do have some challenges with our food supply today, and we have a bigger challenge when you live and work on the road. Some supplementation is necessary, but I always want to address food first, lifestyle first, and then when we fix as many things as we can with the food we have available and the lifestyle choices we can make, there's going to be some things left over that need to be addressed. And when we identify what they are specifically and we target a supplement to fix that problem, then I'm okay with it. But I never want to go to supplements first. And my goal is always use a supplement to solve a problem, but the goal should be to stop the supplements at some point, too, because I don't want to be taking supplements the rest of my life. And I don't think – now, there are some exceptions. if we've done so much damage to our body, we may have to supplement for the rest of our life. One example I can give is if your gallbladder's been removed, if you want to be truly healthy, you have to supplement the rest of your life. And a lot of people are in that position. So that's an exception to the rule. Every other supplement, my goal would be use it to fix a problem and then work towards getting off the supplement. When it comes to weight loss, I can guarantee you there is no supplement in the world that's going to work. I don't care how many tests they run, how many testimonials they have. There are no supplements. There are no one food that's going to help you lose weight. And even though I know that that's a good goal to have, I don't even like to focus on the losing weight part. I like to focus on getting our body back to its natural state of health. And when we do that, your body will normalize its weight. Now, let me ask you a question. Do you think, and you can look around, there's a lot of people way overweight, and it gets worse every single year. It's worse with kids. Do you believe that that is a natural state for the human body, to be overweight?
No, not at all.
No, not at all. And for hundreds of thousands or maybe even millions of years, depending on how long you believe we've been on the planet, do you think people were overweight? Do you think they would have survived in the wild if they were overweight?
No, I don't think so.
No. No, they would have died. They would have been eaten by the saber-toothed tiger. You wouldn't survive. So that was not a natural state. It's a very unnatural state. And all we have to do is get back to treating our bodies the way they were designed, and the weight will just go away. And that's the beauty of the ketogenic diet. Nobody feels like they're dieting. They eat when they're hungry. They don't eat when they're not hungry. They eat till they're full and satisfied. And if you're hungry, something is wrong. Because hunger is a signal that our body needs something. The problem is we're not giving our body what it needs, so it's hungry all the time. And we just keep eating stuff that isn't even really food, and we keep eating more and more and more of it, and that's why we're overweight. So when we get back to eating, our phrase here is a properly prepared, nutrient-dense, whole food diet. And if you do that, you get to eat as much as you want. You eat when you're hungry. You don't eat when you're not. And your body will normalize its weight. And that's the beauty of this. So the focus is on food. The focus is on eating the right foods. And the first thing we need to do, let me give you three quick rules. One, eliminate all grain from your diet. All of it. This is probably the single biggest thing people could do to be healthy. I would challenge anybody, and I've said this before, and nobody takes me up on the challenge. I want somebody to tell me why we would eat grain. What benefit do we possibly get from eating grain? There are none. And there are a ton of downsides. So when we're talking about grain, we're talking about wheat, rye, oats, barley, corn, rice. Those are all grains, and they have no place in our diet. We should not be eating any food that has that in it. And there's a hundred reasons, we've gone through it in some of our other segments, but just if you can eliminate grains, it is the single biggest thing. Now, that means pasta, bread, anything made with wheat, anything made with rice, anything made with corn. That wipes out a lot of the standard American diet, because those are the things people are eating the most of every single day. This is why most people won't be able to do this. They just don't. They just won't give up that much food. and it sounds horrible in the beginning. Now that I've done it, so many other people will say this, it's one of the most amazing things I've done. I can't imagine going back to eating that stuff ever. So step number one, eliminate all grains. That will also way reduce your carb load, because grains are all loaded with carbs, and carbs and sugar is what's killing us. So eliminate all grains. Two, stop drinking your calories. You should not drink any kind of soda or sugared beverage or sports drink or tea in a bottle loaded with sugar. Really, the only liquid we need to live and survive and actually be very, very healthy is water. That's it. That's the only liquid that's necessary in our diet. Now, I do like coffee, I do like tea, and I do like cocoa, and I do drink those three, but I make them one very healthy, and I make it a part of the diet. Bulletproof coffee is one example, because I'm adding good grass-fed butter, good coconut oil. I add some minerals to mine. I add some raw chocolate. That becomes a really healthy drink, and it becomes one of your energy sources when you're ketogenic. So, you know, for right now, I would say if you could focus on just one of those two things, I wouldn't even do them both at the same time. And then keep listening and call back, and we'll move on to the other steps. I wouldn't worry about supplements right now. I would focus on pick one of those two things and do it for the next 14 days. And then if it's working really well for you, feel ambitious, maybe attack the second one for another 14 or 15 days. And 30 days from now, let's see where those two changes take you.
Okay. Yeah,
so now when you
eliminate
food,
I mean,
I was going to add one more thing. When you eliminate grains and sugar, you're going to be very low carb. I wouldn't worry about counting them right now. And you have to say, okay, if I give up all that stuff, what am I going to eat? Here's primarily what you're going to eat in a very, very general sense. You are going to eat a lot of vegetables. They're really good for you. Find ways. Salads, stir fries, whatever works for you, dipping them in something, whatever you have to do to get yourself a lot more vegetables, do it. You're going to eat a little bit of protein and lean towards the fattier cuts of meat, things like bacon and short ribs and ribs and skin on the chicken. And so you're going to eat vegetables, little bit of meat, and a lot of fat, good fats, grass-fed butter, coconut oil, avocados, nuts, seeds, olive oil, grass-fed and pastured animals. Lean toward those things to take the place of all those grains. And then call me back, and we'll continue on with the process. Thanks for joining me. I'm all out of time today. We'll see you next time. Be safe. Be profitable. Fit and healthy, always through the hard work and that journey. All right, everybody, let me check the call board here real quick, and I'll tell you what we're going to do. Let me count some questions. I don't have enough questions for an entire hour, but I'm going to go ahead and get started so I can take the questions I do have on hold. And if we run out of questions, we'll just stop after a couple segments. So I can tell you right now, if you want to get through and you press one on your phone with it's wide open, anything you want to ask, we'll be able to get to you in this segment. So here we go.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry.
This is Trucking Business and Beyond, the show that puts the money where it belongs,
back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking. We take your calls and answer your questions about trucks, money, fuel mileage, maintenance, tires, taxes, technology, health and fitness on the road, getting started as an owner-operator, finding freight, working with brokers, getting your own authority. The list goes on and on. If you've got a question, just pick up the phone and call me. We'll talk about it here on the air. If you've been listening the last couple weeks, I've been starting off most shows with a book review. The last show, I wrapped up the book, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, and I highly recommend that book. You can go back and listen to those. You can find it on our website at letstruck.com. And I haven't decided which book I want to do next, so I don't have a book to open tonight with. I'm really leaning towards, since we just talked about 7 really good habits, I have a couple books that I've read in the past on developing habits. I just need to sit down and take some time and figure out which one I want to do next. And this is something I'm going to continue doing because we're getting a great response to this. So I'll also say, if you have a certain book that maybe you're interested in and you're not sure if you want to invest the money and time into it, and you'd like to see me review it, just drop me an email. There's a very good chance I've already read it. The good news for me is I've already read thousands of books. So doing the book review is just a matter of sitting down and putting some notes together and doing it. But if you have a book and you want me to review it and it looks interesting enough and I haven't read it, I will, because I still read about 2 books a week. So drop me an email to support@letstruck.com. Let me know what you think about the book reviews, if you love them, if you hate them, if you don't really care. I'd love to get some feedback. And if you have a book you would like to see me review, just send it along and I'll put it on the list. Let's get to some phone calls. Let's go to Wisconsin to get started. Eric, welcome to the program.
Yes, Kevin. I have a question about rear end ratio. Looking at a truck 01, M14, 13 speed, would I change those two?
433 rears. You could drive right up the side of a building with those things. They're so low. I'm assuming this truck was probably used in some sort of local operation.
Yes, it was.
Okay. That's much more common. Local, heavy haul construction, that kind of stuff. You tend to see those really, really low gear ratios. And that one's low. I haven't heard of 433 in a long, long time. For an N14, tell me a little bit about your operation. What kind of trailer and freight, what part of the country?
Stepdeck, you know, the lower 48 or 47,
okay.
I should say.
Step deck, but mostly normal weight or permitted loads?
Just
which one?
Normal weight, you know, nothing over 80,000 pounds, you know.
Yeah, and that's what I consider normal. And people say, oh, I pull really heavy, and then I ask them what they mean, and they say, I'm always 75,000. Well, that's not heavy. That's just normal. So here's the thing. Step deck, we know we have one big challenge when it comes to fuel economy, and that's aerodynamics. And there's not a lot you're going to do about it. The stuff you pull is going to be ugly. But the most important factor on aerodynamics is speed. The uglier the load, the more slowing down helps. So the next question, and this is totally up to you, but what do you think your average cruise speed is going to be? Where are you going to spend most of your time driving?
55 to 60.
Then I would put, with that 13 speed, I would put, I'm going to give you two options. I'm going to give you what I would ideally like to see, and that is going all the way to a gear ratio like a 279. And that means you're going to run in 11th gear. So 11th gear, 55 to 60 with 279s in the N14 is going to give you the best possible fuel economy based on gearing. When you need to go faster, you're going to have 12th gear. And when the cops are chasing you and you don't want to stop, you're going to have 13th. And you're hardly ever going to use that gear. But that's going to give you the best fuel economy and give you another gear to go faster when you need to. If we gear a truck to run in its top gear, which is what everybody does, if we gear it to run in 13th, that's all you've got. You don't have another option. And 13th is our most inefficient gear because the further we go past direct, the more inefficient the gear becomes. So 12th is less efficient than 11th because 11th is direct, and 13th is even less efficient than 12th. So we want to gear it to run in 11th. 12th gives us some flexibility. 13th we might use once in a while, but that's going to be your most effective way to gear this truck.
You said you're going to give me two different ratios.
Oh, yeah.
279,
yeah,
and what else?
Yeah, the other option is to gear it, you know, kind of the way everybody else does, gearing it to run in your top gear. And in that case, I would put in 370s. You're going to run 55 to 60 in 13th gear, and that's going to be it. When you try to run 65, you're going to be, you know, your RPMs are going to be a little on the high side. You're not as efficient. That's a much more common. If you went out and asked, you know, 10 other people who knew anything about gear ratios, they would probably recommend a 370 for that. But I think the 279 is way more effective.
Am I hindered by aerodynamics? This tractor I'm looking at, the K100?
No, actually you're not. Aerodynamics can be a little tricky, and we think of cab overs as being, you know, horrible aerodynamics, and they're really not. If you look at Europe designs very, very aerodynamic cab overs. In fact, there is some thought that the most aerodynamic truck trailer combination would start with a cab over. Not a, you know, what we think of as an aerodynamic tractor with a hood, because the most aerodynamic shape we have is actually a raindrop. If you look at the way a raindrop falls, the air is shaping it to literally the perfect aerodynamic shape. And it's a kind of a bubble in the front and a point in the back. Now, if we turn that on its side and we want it to go straight down the road, that's what we would have. We would have this big bubble in the front, and our trailer would taper back to a point. And the best way to do that would be with a cab over. So cab overs are not bad aerodynamically. Now, we don't have great designs, but there are some things we can do to improve it. So I like cab overs. I'm a pretty big fan of cab overs. I wish we hadn't have lost them in this country.
Sam, one other question. You got time?
Sure.
Did you guys ever test the automatic chains or chains, no chains, or instant chains, they call them?
I didn't test them personally. I did all the research. I reviewed them. And then I talked to some people I really trust that have them. And our conclusion was they are pretty darn amazing. People who have them love them. It's a great idea. I mean, I absolutely love the idea, and it seems to work really well in the real world. The people that I know, and the people that I know that have them, have had them for several years. So they've held up well, they perform well, they're not having any problems with them. So, yeah, I like them a lot.
So they are worth the initial investment then?
I believe so. Yeah, let's qualify that. If you're in an area where you're going to use them a lot, or you might, you know, we never know. Sometimes no matter where you run, we get mild winters and you're not going to chain up that often. But if I ran out west, if I ran the western states, I would have them.
All right. I appreciate your time, Kevin. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. Let's head off to North Carolina. Mark, welcome to the program.
How's it going, Kevin?
Going good. What's on your mind today?
We got an oil sample to look at.
All right. Well, there's the music. So let me take a look at this during the break, and we will come right back and we'll talk about it. Don't go away. We've got lots more coming. Stick around. Kevin Truck. Back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. We're going to go right back to the phones. I was talking with Mark in North Carolina about an oil sample. So, Mark, let me just verify some numbers here. A little over 900,000 on the engine and about 40,000 on the oil. Is that correct?
No. This and there were a change to oil at 50,000 and the had 537,000 on the engine.
Oh, maybe I'm looking at the wrong sample then. Hold on, let me make sure I've got the right one here.
Okay.
I don't believe I do. I'm not sure why. I've got a sample that actually comes up under James. That wouldn't be you, would it?
No, it'd be Mark James. It's I is an IDA 526865 is the number.
Huh. All right. Well, let me figure out why we've got the wrong sample, because it's not going to do any good for me to read a different sample, and I'll have to come back to you in a minute. But I'm going to head off to Greg in Minnesota, and I think we're going to look at Greg's sample. Greg, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. Good afternoon. Thanks for taking the call.
You're welcome. Now, when I pull up this sample, it looks like this one is yours. So let's take a look at what we've got here. And I assume that's what you're calling about, right? Your oil sample?
Yep. Yes, I am.
All right. And let's... So this is a Cummins N14.
Yep.
And how many miles on the truck? How many miles on the oil? I just want to verify. I'm showing 1.6 million on the engine.
Yep, that's correct. Never been touched.
Oh,
as
man.
Far as,
you know,
bottom half.
Yeah, this is so interesting because I've always made the comment that the N14 is just kind of a bulletproof engine. There's nothing really exciting about it. You know, it's not... I don't get overly excited the way I do with the Series 60 because the fuel economy potential is so great on a Series 60. Or, you know, you think about a Cat, a 6NZ, and you think about power and torque. And the Cummins is just kind of there, the N14. But what we've learned recently is that this engine outlives almost every other engine I've ever seen. It is not unusual to find N14s that have over 1.5 million miles and still going strong. And I know two of them that reached 2 million miles without being touched. That is phenomenal.
Yeah, it does a pretty good job, actually. I mean, I've done some work. I replaced the oil pump in it 24 months ago. And the cooling nozzles are crucial because the old ones, they crack, they separate, and it'll start bleeding out on the inside. But, so basically I've had liner problems where they drop a little bit, and then we put the 2000 shim to build those back up, and so far they've been staying in there. But I think once they go back out again, I think we're going to have to cut the counterboards and just do an in-frame on it, I believe.
Yeah, I think it's time. You know, we're at 1.6, and there is one other issue. Now, before we get to the, and it's not really bad news. We should expect it by this time. But yep. There's some good news, too. This engine is running beautifully. For this many miles, I mean, it is still really clean burning. Your base number looks like you just poured the oil out of a bottle. It's so high still. But there is one concern. We're starting to see some lead and some copper. So the bigger concern I see right now is some bearing wear. So we really want to keep an eye on that. You know, I watch your oil pressure. You might start to see some oil pressure drop. And I just think it's time to roll in a set of bearings, and really it's just time for an in-frame and do the bearings along with it.
Yeah. I got some high oil consumption. I probably put a gallon in every, like, 2,500 to 3,000 miles. But I do notice, too, that my accessory drive seal is leaking. Now that you brought that up about the aluminum, I'm not wondering if my accessory drive bearing in there isn't wearing a little bit. Because when you get the belts too tight on them, on the accessory drive pulley, then they'll have a tendency to pull them and put extra pressure on that bearing.
Right.
So that's curious about that.
Yeah, this is still a really strong engine. It's had its useful life. And I just wouldn't push. I wouldn't push it much further because I would hate to see. This is a block that we want to keep alive for a long time. I would hate to see something go wrong where we damage this block and couldn't use it again. So I would be scheduling this in frame pretty quickly.
All right.
I don't want to scare you. I don't want you to think it's going to fail next week. But I wouldn't put it off.
Yeah. Well, that's maybe what we should do, and then probably around August here, late August and September, that probably schedule that to get that done. Then, would you do just an in-frame, or would you pull it out and just go through it? Because I got like an imbalance in it also, and a slight vibration, but I don't know exactly what that is. It might be because my in 14, it's notorious to have an injector problems, and I've had some injector problems with this, and I believe I still do. So it's just, I don't know.
Yeah. So. You know, a lot of this comes down to budget and how long you plan on keeping the truck. If you have the budget and you wanted this to be another million miles, I might lean towards an out of frame. And it's not just the life we'll get out of it, but if you do an out of frame, we can make that engine really, really smooth. There are some things you can do that help it. You know, we would line bore it. Magnaflux, flux the crank, all of those things that would make it run really smooth. And if you get a shop that knows what they're doing, somebody like a Pittsburgh Power, you balance all the pistons and connecting rods as well. And that will really smooth out an engine, which also makes it more efficient. It lasts longer. It's easier on you. Now the pistons and connecting rods can be done on an in-frame. The line bore and those kind of things would require an out of frame. So I'm good with either one. It would really come down to, again, budget. And, you know, do you want to make that extra upfront investment? And it will pay for itself. I believe that doing a good out of frame is a good investment as long as you've got the time. If you're going to get rid of this truck in 2 or 3 years, then I would say, no, don't do an out of frame. If you want to keep it another 5 or 6, I think an out-of-frame could pay for itself. All right, let's go back to Mark in North Carolina, because now I've got Mark Sample. Mark, are you with me?
Yes, sir.
All right, so let's now we're talking 537,000 on the engine and 50,000 on the oil. Does that sound better?
Yeah, that's correct.
All right. Fuel dilution looks good. Soot looks good. What kind of engine is this? It doesn't say.
It's a DD15 2011 Cascadia.
Got it. Okay. Viscosity's good. Base is holding up. There are no real concerns about wear metals. We do have a little bit of potassium and sodium, though. Have you had to add any coolant to this engine?
I've had the truck 100,000 miles, and I've had to put in a gallon and a half of coolant.
Yuck, somewhere. And it's getting into the engine, and that's not a good thing. We need to address that. Could be EGR cooler. That's the least problematic, the easiest one to fix, so I would check that first. If it's not an EGR cooler, it's going to be more than likely a head gasket or a cracked head. So we've just got to start, you know, eliminating possibilities, and I would start with the EGR.
All right, I'll look into it.
All right, and keep sampling, because that'll give us an idea of whether or not it's getting worse. But for right now, I would be looking for that that coolant issue. I'm looking at the clock, and it looks like we're going to need to get to a break here. So I'm going to take us into a break, and we will come right back with more stuff. Check out the website, letstruck.com. There's all kinds of stuff going on over there. We have some plans for some cool new stuff coming up before the end of the year, and I'll be letting you know about that. And just lots of great resources. If you want to go back and listen to podcasts and shows, you can do that as well. We'll be right back with more stuff. I'm Kevin Rothberg. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. We're going to get right back to the phone calls. Let's head off to Texas. Bill, welcome to the program.
Yes. Thought I'd give you a little comment on my how my diet has worked for me and give you one question.
Sure.
Last year, I followed a ketogenic diet pretty well, lost 40 pounds, dropped Invokana, a diabetic drug, got off of that, told my cardiologist that I went off statins, and that worked. And what my
Excellent.
Feedback right now is that they say, just keep doing the same thing. Now I just got to get the 40 more off, and I'm finally getting back strictly on my diet again.
Excellent, excellent. So a couple things. Let me address a couple things there. One, the statins, and I'm going to just say this across the board. I think everybody taking a statin should stop. There is so little evidence that statins help anybody. There's a tiny group of people who have already suffered a heart attack where there might be a tiny amount of evidence that it could help them. But so could a really good, healthy lifestyle would help them way more and wouldn't have any of the nasty side effects. For the rest of the people there's zero evidence that statins do any good, and there's a tremendous amount of evidence that they do a ton of harm. And there is no reason you don't have to taper off statins. I would just tell people, quit. You don't even have to talk to your doctor. Just quit taking the damn things. They're a disaster. So I'm glad you're doing that. The Invokana, that's a diabetes medication, correct?
Correct.
And you're off that, you say?
Yes.
That's amazing.
Drop that. I am still on metformin, and if I stayed real close to my diet, ketogenic, I could probably get off that too. But at the moment, I'm staying on that.
You can. Yeah, and that's good. So I like this. The Invokana, that is one that you can get off sooner. The metformin is, I don't want to say it's one of the better things because you'd want to be off that too, but it's not as problematic. So that that's amazing. Congratulations on getting off the Invokana. Work towards, you know, continuing to get better at this. And you will get off the metformin. It's not probably. You will. So you're on your way. Here's the thing about, you know, we've kind of really screwed up the word diet. Diet, all diet means is what we eat. That's it. It's just what somebody eats. If you say this is somebody's diet, you know, it's just what they eat. We have come to think of it more of a verb. We are doing a diet. And we need to go back to kind of just thinking about what should we eat for the rest of our life. This isn't temporary. You know, it's so funny. People say, people who are trying to criticize either the paleo lifestyle or the ketogenic lifestyle, they'll say, oh, but if you quit eating that way, you'll just gain the weight back. Well, of course you will. There isn't a diet on the planet that you could do for a certain amount of time, lose weight, and then go back to eating the way you used to and not gain the weight. That's illogical. Why? I don't even know why we make that statement. Oh, but if you quit eating that way, you'll gain the weight back. Duh. Of course you will. So we have to start looking at this and finding a way of eating that works for the rest of our life. So, you know, and, you know, whether that's ketogenic, paleo, somewhere in between, the real key is to eat as much real food as we can, as much unprocessed, real whole food as possible. There's, you know, people have been healthy around the world on wildly different foods. I don't even want to say wildly different diets, although that's what it is. Wildly different foods. There were, you know, civilizations and cultures that ate a lot of fruit and they were very healthy doing it. Most Americans today shouldn't be eating fruit for two reasons. One, most of our fruit has been hybridized so bad that it's way too high in sugar. And two, most Americans have done so much damage to their sugar handling mechanisms that they can't deal with fruit. There have been cultures that have been very, very healthy eating 95% animal products and almost no vegetation. Does that mean everybody could eat that way and be healthy? Probably not. There are some genetic differences. But the one thing that is always the same is all of the healthy ancestral diets were always whole food. They weren't processed. So that's the first thing we need to get back to. And here's the thing. When you eat real whole food, and if we leave fruit out for right now, even though it is a real whole food, if we leave that out, or we eat it in very small amounts, we eat berries, some of the lower sugar fruits, by eating whole real food, you will be eating low carb because carbs don't really exist in nature, not in food, not in the food we can eat without processing. You know, all of the food that is very high in carbs, it's all processed. So it almost proves that our natural diet was low carb, and our natural diet for most cultures was high fat. There are some exceptions to that, but for the most part, high fat, moderate protein, low carb works, and that's what a ketogenic diet is.
Okay, I do have one question. I primarily drive a computer rather than a truck, but I do have a travel trailer. It is a 2011 travel trailer, and I just bought it last year. But it has 2010 tires on it, so I'm thinking it's time to replace tires.
Yep.
What is your recommendation for tires, since Michelin doesn't seem to make travel trailer tires?
Does it sit outside?
Yes.
Then it definitely needs tires. I will not let it. Actually, I would rather see a tire that was driven, you know, very regularly for 5 years. The longer they sit, the worse they become, especially outside. If there's sun on them, it's even worse. Michelin may not make a travel trailer tire, but does Michelin make a tire that will fit on the rims you have?
Uncertain of the width. They're 205/75s.
I would check first. Even if they have, say, a passenger car tire that will fit that rim, I would buy it. I you know, I'm a big fan of Michelin truck tires. I have Michelin tires on my coach. Had Michelin tires on all my trucks. Now, I will have to say, I have some Goodyears on the drive axle that I'm kind of testing on this right now, but they're going to get switched. I have Michelin on every other position.
What did you have on your toy hauler?
Michelin. Michelin makes that was an odd size tire too, but Michelin makes a tire for that size toy hauler. That tire has not changed design in 20 years. The Michelin XP, I believe, was the tire on that. That tire has been around forever, and it is just an amazing tire. It's actually a light truck tire, I think. I think it's a light truck tire. Just an amazing, amazing tire. So that's what got put on my toy hauler as soon as I got it. So I would look at Michelin first. If not, I would stick with the name brands. If Michelin didn't have the right size, I would look at Bridgestone next. If Bridgestone didn't make the right tire, I would probably look at either Yokohama or Continental after that. I would try to stay with those four. I've never had a lot of luck with Goodyear. It's kind of why I'm leaving it on this drive axle and see how they do on this. But in my truck testing, I just never had any luck with Goodyear. It was just the tire that gave me the most problems all the time. So I would look at those four brands first and see if you can find anything in those four brands, you're going to be happy with it. Most of the travel trailers use all the funky off brands nobody's ever heard of, and they're just junk.
That's right. It's a strange brand on it right now.
They always are. They try to save as much money as they can when they build those things, and then people just keep using the same tires. They're just horrible. That's why you always see travel trailers and RVs on the side of the road with flats. I see it constantly. This is a case where it's really worth it to spend the money and get a good tire. And then when you park it outside, put wheel covers on it. It makes a huge difference. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rudd. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. We're down to the final segment, so I'm going to get right back to some phone calls. We're off to Louisiana. Chris, welcome to the program.
Hey, how you doing, Kevin?
Good. What's on your mind today?
Yeah. I just want to get your opinion on the new electric truck supposed to be coming out.
Oh, yeah. Boy, I was just I was scrolling back through Facebook to see if I could find my post. I did a long post on this, and I've talked about it a couple times on the air. I could do an entire hour about this truck, and I'll just give you the quick rundown because we're in our final segment. If I spent an hour on this truck, there would not be one positive thing I would say during that hour. This
All
truck
right.
is, when I look at the numbers they're using, I think it is just an outright scam. I don't think anybody ever plans on building this truck. I think they're taking deposits and they're just going to disappear with the money. Now, that's a pretty strong accusation. And I'm going to put you back on hold so you can listen, just because I'm getting a lot of background noise. But I'll try to find that post and move it back up to the top if I can find it, because I went real deep into the numbers. But I can tell you, this truck is never going to make it to market. Nothing about this truck makes any sense at all other than using hybrid electric drives. I think there is some potential in that technology. In fact, there are two companies that I know of, Pittsburgh Power being one of them, that is working on a hybrid electric drive axle right now. And I think that has a lot of potential. But there's a big difference between developing an axle and building a whole new truck from scratch, which is outrageously expensive. I mean, we are talking many, many hundreds of millions of dollars. Nothing about this truck and the numbers they're putting out make sense. Nothing. And I broke all those numbers down and explained them in that post and on one of the previous shows. And I'm getting a lot of questions about this. So I'm going to go back and find the shows, find the post, and get them up so that you can see the numbers that I went through in depth. Let's go to Louisiana. Jonathan, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. I wanted to ask you about ham and cheese. I'm not overweight or anything. I'm 35, weigh 150. I don't want to lose any weight either. And
okay.
I do in the morning. I get up, you know, I don't want to go sit down in a restaurant, order, eat. I like to get up and go. So I bought me some ham and cheese, and I've been eating that in the morning. It'll last me like all the way till it'll last me till like early afternoon before I even get hungry. And
okay.
I wanted to know if that was a, you know, good thing to eat, you know, as far
well,
as, like, fat.
It's not my favorite. And so there's a couple ways we look at this. It's ketogenic. Let's start there. That is ketogenic food. It's not real quality food, and it's not real healthy food. So one of the big advantages of a ketogenic diet is losing weight, the most effective way to lose weight. Well, you don't want to lose weight. So what we
Right.
would focus on more for you, I would focus more on getting really healthy for the long term. You know, you're 35. I would want to see you just as healthy as 60 as you are now. So your goals would be more long term. A lot of people come to me, we move them right into a ketogenic diet. They lose weight. They get rid of a lot of their health issues. And this would be ketogenic food, but it's not what I would call healthy food. Here's why. Ham is way overprocessed. The meat probably came from a poor source to begin with. And then it's highly processed as ham. When you say cheese, that there's a wide range. Tell me what kind of cheese, what brand, maybe?
I think it's American cheese. That's I don't know what kind of cheese it is. It's back in my cooler backyard.
That's not even food. So let's replace those two things with things that are very, very similar but much healthier. So here's what I would recommend. And it's going to cost you a little more. Both items I'm going to tell you about are more expensive, but they're way healthier. But they will do the same thing for you. They're going to be quick, easy, convenient, easy to store in the truck, and they'll keep you full and you can eat them while you're driving. So we accomplish the same things you've done, but we make them much healthier. I would first look for, on the cheese side, you're probably either going to have to go to one of the bigger grocery stores or a health food store like a Whole Foods or something along those lines. But more and more grocery stores are starting to carry this. Go to the cheese section and don't go to like the – usually it's not in the regular cheese section. It's usually in the refrigerated case for one and in the – where they carry some of the more maybe higher-end cheeses or exotic cheeses. You want to look for what's called raw milk cheese. That means the milk came out of the cow. It wasn't pasteurized. It wasn't homogenized. They took the milk. They didn't process it at all, and they made cheese out of it. Not only does it taste amazing, but it's really healthy. And the stuff you're eating isn't. So let's make that substitution. You're going to have to work a little bit. You're going to have to pay a little more, but it lasts forever. I mean, you're going to eat it long before it's ever going to spoil. So you're going to replace that non-food American cheese with a really high-quality raw milk cheese, and you're going to replace the ham, and you've got several options here. You can go to a company called Epic, and you can order them online, or I am starting to see Epic in a lot more stores now. Epic makes all kinds of jerkies and meat bars. I know that sounds a little funky, but they'll take like one of them that I really like is beef, cherry, and habanero. So it's a little spicy, not a lot, a little sweet, but it's all grass-fed, real high-quality beef. You eat one of those bars and a little bit of cheese, and I'm like you. I could get up in the morning, grab one of those bars and a couple of hunks of cheese, and I'm good till 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And
yeah,
if
but
I'm
now here,
really,
here,
go ahead.
I didn't mean to cut you off, but here's what happened. I only been doing this for about a week and a half, but sometimes I just feel real weak. You know,
well,
come
that's
like 2-3 o'clock in the afternoon, it's just no.
Two reasons for that. Yeah, two reasons for that. One is that the quality of the food you're eating is really poor. There's no nutrients in it at all. It's way over processed. So that's part of the reason. The other part is you're not getting enough fat. So we need to add some fat to this. Now, the Epic bars that I'm talking about are a pretty good source of fat. The cheese is a good source of fat. One of the things that I add to this when I eat it is mayonnaise. But I make my own, or there's one brand of mayonnaise that I buy that is really good, and it's made by a company called Primal Foods. And it's just avocado oil, egg, lemon, and salt. That's it. The same way I would make it at home, and they use a good oil. So, you know, you dip your cheese or the meat or the jerky or whatever in a little bit of mayonnaise. That adds a bunch of fat. The fat is what's going to give you the energy. Now, the other thing is, if you've only been doing this for a week and a half, you haven't become keto adapted yet. Your body doesn't know how to burn fat for energy. So the longer you do this, the more you're going to teach it how to burn fat for energy. But you have to make sure you give it enough fat. The other thing you could eat with this would be an avocado. Eat an avocado with this. That's going to add a lot of fat. Eat a handful of nuts. Nuts are a really good source of fat and other nutrients. So almonds, walnuts, macadamia nuts, pistachios, cashews.
Yeah.
Eat
I keep a lot
nuts
of,
along with this.
Yeah, I keep a lot of nuts in the truck, pecans. What about pecans? Pecans okay?
Pecans are good, too. Pecans are a really good choice. That ranks and, up in the top three or four.
Okay, here's another thing I found. I mean, like I've been eating a lot of protein, but sometimes I go like a week and a half like a week and a half without using going to the restroom, you know.
Cut back on the protein. The avocados will help with that, and drink a lot more water, a lot more. And wish I had more time. I would also talk about a product called Light Balance. If you put that in your water and your coffee, that is going to help with the mineral balance of the digestion. And we'll talk about that more next time. Thanks for joining me. Be safe, profitable, fit, and healthy. Always the hard work. All right, everybody, thanks for joining us. A quick heads up, tomorrow, you don't want to miss it. You want to join us tomorrow. We have a great show lined up. We've got Pittsburgh Power in the first hour, and we have got a show about fuel tax and, more importantly, fuel optimization. And Chris Lee from ProMiles is going to be joining us and helping out with that. So don't miss it. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Thanks.